public input. We have quite a stack of them here. It's a 3 minutes. At the end of 3 minutes, if you're not done, please finish your sentence. We've got to hear from a lot of people. So we're going to start that. I'm going to call you up two at a time, with the exception of the first one that isn't limited to 3 minutes. As an elected official, Senator Curtis King from Yakima came over to speak, and we're going to let him speak and go about his life, and we'll continue on. We're going
to
try.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you allowing me to speak to you today. And before I start, let me say thank you for all of the things that you all do and the time and the effort that you put in. I know that we all have busy schedules, but your willingness to serve fish and wildlife needs to be recognized, and I want to do that. So with that, I'd like to talk briefly, and I'll be as quick as I can. I'm going to be all over the place, but we'll do the best we can with it, about the Natchez Fish Hatchery and the possible closing of that hatchery. So I want you to know that the two FTEs that work there, they have 57 different plantings from February to July that cover Yakima, Kittitas, and Benton counties. 57. They have 96,000 fish. They raise 96,000 fish at 2.5 fish per pound. They raise 7,000 jumbos over 1 pound each. 300,000 kokanees. They also put 12,000 rainbow and 12,000 cutthroat into High Lakes. That's done through volunteers. So it's a very active and very productive facility. The jumbos are, and I think the kokanees are raised over in an area that I would call Gleed and Suntides, on land that's owned by the BPA, and you have an agreement to do that there. So the closing of this would impact that as well. The plant, find my note, they produce over 54,000 pounds of fish a year. That's 27,000 pounds per FTE. Most of your hatcheries operate at less than 20,000 per FTE. So it's a very efficient, very effective plant. So then there's reference then to losing the water supply and the need for updating and changing that water supply. Well, since 2000 to 2018, they've had 1 year where they've had a water shortage. They haven't had one since, and that was in 14 and 15. They haven't had one since, and there was none before. The staff that worked there believe it was a one-time problem, and it doesn't need, really, there is no shortage. Beyond that, the quality of the water that is there is it's a great water temperature. The staff said the water source is priceless, in that you don't have to do anything to the water. When you look at that facility, you can add capacity without increasing FTEs, without increasing the water that's needed, by adding a retaining pond on the south end, so that all the water flows through, goes through the runways, goes through the one rearing pond that's there into another rearing pond, the added rearing pond. You could increase the capacity at little or no cost other than putting in that rearing pond. So there's a great way to expand that facility. Beyond that, the youth events that they do with these two FTEs, Children's Village, which is for kids that are medically challenged. They now have a Titan Middle School Fishing Club. They have events at Thames Pond off of Highway 12 by Oak Creek. They do school tours, and the Zilla High School has a program for planting fish. So they're very much community-oriented and are part of the community. So I just want you to think about what effect closing this hatchery would have. I think it's the wrong message. I think it's the wrong thing to do. You have a very efficient and effective hatchery there, and you ought to keep it open. So my other comments have to do with when you look at I've got a letter in response to a letter that I wrote, and I appreciate that response, but you're looking at a 10 to 15, at least in the letter it said you were considering a 10 to 15% increase in fishing licenses and other licenses, and that was a modest increase. Well, I would question whether 10 or 15% is a modest increase. I understand the need that you have for more income. I really do. I mean, we face that all the time in the legislature. But I want you to consider the increases that have occurred over the last 10 or 15 years and what another increase is going to do. My belief, you close the Natchez Fish Hatchery and then you raise the price 10 or 15%. What does that say to the citizens in the Yakima area and the Yakima Valley and all the places that that hatchery serves? It's like, well, you want me to pay more and there's going to be less fish. Now, I realize there's plans to pay that, but I would also say that the revenue or the savings that you're calculating by closing this plant, I think, are relatively non-existent. By the time you close the plant and then bring in fish from other areas, I just don't see how that's going to pay. I would also say I've looked at the added properties that Fish and Wildlife takes in every year, and it's about an increase of about 2%. And I realize that you have a $33 million shortfall, and I guess one of the things is, as you look at increasing the number of acres that you own every year, when do you get to the point where enough is enough? And when you there's dollars available to buy that land, but once you buy it and once you own it, you got to maintain it, and that costs money. And at some point, you got to say, I can't afford, even if somebody is giving you the money, I can't afford to do it because now I got to maintain it. So I want you to think about that, and I would suggest you even look at maybe selling some of that land. You have to be very selective in doing that, but I think it's worth looking at to try and help cover that shortfall. So as you consider the Natchez Hatchery, I would just say that I've been out there three times in the last 2 months, and I believe that's three times more than the people that are making the recommendations and the decisions about what is needed at that facility, because I don't believe they've been there. And that's a little disconcerting for me, because it is a great plant. The runways are in great shape. The pumps are in great shape. The water supply, I think, is more than adequate. And there's an easy way to add capacity. So I hope you will take that off of your plate. But rather than just sit here and complain and make recommendations, I would close by saying I'm more than willing to sit down. Let's see what we can do to help solve that shortfall that you have. The legislature should be involved with that. And I know that we gave you some directive, and I know you're trying to meet that. But let's work together and let's see how we can make you as successful as you can be. So with that, thank you for the time.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions? Commissioner Holzmiller.
I guess I would just like to speak in support of what he said. I realize we have a budget deficit we got to work with, but this part of the state that I grew up in, as kids growing up, we hunted and we fished, and that was our recreation. I always say I didn't quit fishing. Fishing quit me, because everything in our part of the world is driven by endangered species. The creek fishing that we used to be able to do, that ship has sailed. Can't even think about doing that. Fishing on the Rond, yeah, we have world-class steelhead fishing, but for just take a bunch of kids down to the river and give them some worms, can't do that anymore. So when we have an opportunity like this fellow was talking about, I just hate to see that go away for the kids, because we had a lot of fun doing that when we were kids.
I understand. Well, and if you get kids interested in fishing, they turn into adults after a while, so.
They do. Mr. Graybill.
True.
Thank you for coming over. I really appreciate your presence here today, and you should be encouraged to know that there will be a motion later today at this meeting to keep the hatchery and move it off of that efficiency list.
Well, I appreciate that.
And just as an example to support what you've told us, you know, the total operating budget for that facility is just under $500,000, but the economic value it returns through the plants, and these are the families that support the agency, that visit these lakes and streams, is over almost $8 million. It's over $8 million in economic benefit to that local region. So if you're a business person, that just doesn't make sense, does it?
It doesn't to me.
But, well, thank you very much for coming out.
Thank you.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. I just wanted to echo and say thanks very much for coming over. Your presentation made a lot of excellent points, was very well organized, and thank you again.
Anyway, I don't know about the organization, but I ran out of time, to be honest with you. But thank you for giving me this opportunity, and again, I will reiterate, I'm willing and able to sit here and work with you and do what we can because the fish and wildlife is a valuable asset to this state, and we need to make sure that it's run as fairly and as efficient and as effectively as we can do it. I'm willing to help you get there. So,
appreciate it, sir. Thank you again, sir. Oh, pardon me. Mr. Keeney.
I wanted to thank you also. And when this came up and I saw the OMAC hatchery where I'm from on the list, you know, it hit me because I know that area. I walk by that one like you know your hatchery, and they just put a lot of money into it. And what something you said was similar to how I thought about the OMAC hatchery, and is that the message it sends if you close some of these down. I mean, there might be some numbers that pan out in the end. You might save a little, but boy, that message, you know, those are important things to our community. They employ people. Those people are working hard. They're putting fish out into the into where people can enjoy it, and especially like you say, if it's running well, and it just doesn't send a good message. So I appreciate your message also, and I think like was said that this will be voted on later this week.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate the time.
All right. Thank you, Senator. We're going to go now two at a time. Bill Schmidt. And Randy Good, please.
My name is Randy Good, Cedar Woolley, Vice President of the Skagit County Cattlemen's. I emailed a letter from Skagit County Assessor Dave Thomas to the Commission this past Wednesday. His office is 50% complete with a survey of elk intrusion damages to agricultural properties in eastern Skagit County. The survey shows 57 responders are suffering elk intrusion damages of $709,000 annually on 2,008 acres of farmland. By survey completion, the total could reach $1.4 million in damages a year. Not included is $400,000 annual damages to homeowners' gardens and orchards and an unknown amount of elk vehicle collision damages. Farmers are denied opportunity to raise organic products due to the threat of contamination, security, and food safety issues with the elk intrusions. Damages to fences, trees, hay and haylage bales, row crops, loss of farm income, time and labor for the repair of, monitoring, loss of income. Farmers are actually leaving. I just found out Wednesday elk inflicted major damages to a 40-acre blueberry farm in East County, and the list of damages will be huge there. A review of the elk hoof rot disaster. Limping elk with hoof rot symptoms have been reported to conflict specialists in the Lyman, Hamilton, Burmaster, and other elk intrusion areas. 15 elk made residence on one field with 3 limpers, one in serious condition. After 10 complaints filed over a 30-day period, still no action by the specialists. A large cougar is now in the area. 30 elk on my farm spreading disease and eating feed for my cattle. One elk calf dead in my field. one limping elk in serious condition, filed 4 complaints. 25 days later, no response. All I got from a specialist was he would drive by. I told him, what good will that do? A neighboring dairy farm with 120 milking cows on pasture is at risk of hoof rot contamination, as am I. One dead elk in his field. Filed a complaint only to be stood up waiting for specialists to show up the next day. He has to buy 90 tons of alfalfa, that's $34,000, to replace the grass elk consumed, not counting other damages. Since May 10th, I have filed 14 complaints, 4 elk with hoof rot symptoms. I cannot find these filings in the specialist reports. Elk with hoof rot will die from starvation, dehydration, and infection without treatment. This is what is going on under the present DFW management. A long, slowful, painful death. Specialist claims he has no help. I suggested getting tribal help as co-managers. His response, they will not help. As owner and manager of a dairy farm for 35 years, kill permits are not enough to stop the damages. Hazing does not work, as the specialist has stated. DFW management has failed to uphold state law and the proviso. Failed management has led to elk domestication where elk refuse to leave. Year-round hunt, open hunting season on the ag floor with landowners' permission is the only way to stop these damages and make arrangements with the tribes so that they can have a choice of the meat. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Bill Schmidt, and I remember Psychology Today said one of the 10 greatest fears of man is public speaking, and now I know why. Randy's pretty intense because he's suffering a lot of damage. I just want to explain to you briefly, the Skagit Valley is agricultural with mountains going up both sides, which is primarily at the lower levels, private forest land and state timber with U.S. Forest Service above it. Most true hunters really want the elk up in the forest. Everybody I've talked to, even tribal people, don't really want the elk in the agricultural floor, and that's the resounding message from Fish and Wildlife. Everybody seems to agree the elk should not be on that agricultural floor. The problem is, how do you get them out? Right now, they're a bunch of freeloaders. They're not being shot at. There's really very few predators, and they like the hay for the cattle, and they like the riparian areas to get out of the heat of the day. We used to have hunting years ago, and the farmers used to take an elk and keep them hazed out. The Fish and Wildlife Management closed the hunting area for quite a while to build up the stock in the elk. So what's happened is the part of the herd, a band of the Nooksack herd, is now living in the valley floor, and they're actually calving on the valley floor. We're guessing almost 300 calves this last year on the valley floor. So what's happening is the recruitment is a lot larger than these take permits. So all we need is an open season to get the elk back out of the valley floor. If the co-managers have some resentment to this, thinking this is needed for the elk herd, we need to take the position that there's damages to farmers, a loss of agriculture. There's a possibility of accidents on Highway 20. We average about 50 a year, which is one a week. I think the department needs to take the position that there's harm being done and mismanagement of an introduced species, and we need to promote the safety and health of the citizens and the agricultural community. Thank you.
Any questions by anyone? Thank you, gentlemen. Next, we have Jim Tuggle and Don Wallace.
Okay to go. Thanks for the opportunity to be here today. Jim Tuggle, a retired Fish and Wildlife Sergeant, and now president of the Friends of the Deschutes, a small nonprofit organization that promotes the health of the Deschutes River and building the hatchery and promoting education about fish, primarily fish and wildlife in Deschutes River area. I'm not here to talk about the hatchery today. Probably will be back tomorrow to talk about that. I'm here to address two issues. One, I think, is a mistake, and one, I think, is a bad policy on the Deschutes River. Last year in the Deschutes, we have a collection facility. I hope you all seen it. It's up owned by the old Olympia Brewery people. And we had 30,000 Chinook to return to the collection facility. 100 Chinook, only 100, were placed above the rack to go into the Upper Deschutes River, and all of these were males. There's controversy about whether or not a female should be put up there as well as males, and that's been worked out consistently between the Squaxin Island tribe and our leadership. But the Deschutes River is open to salmon fishing, and they put 100 males above the rack? I think that's just nuts. Nutrient enhancement is so important to watersheds. The Deschutes River has a wonderful wild cutthroat population. It's also being managed for wild coho that come in after the Chinook. We need those fish up there for nutrient enhancement. It jump starts the whole business. And Deschutes is like 30, 40 miles of river. So if we're not going to start a sustainable run of fish by not letting the females up, at least put a substantial number of the males up. Now, this year, 30,000 fish returning is a phenomenal return. So we did something right. They did some great work in the hatchery, and there was some environmental thing that met just right. And we don't know what to expect this year. It's proposed that we'll probably have another pretty good return. But that's a bad policy. It needs to be changed. The easy fix to the season on the Deschutes is years ago, I and a group of others got it open year-round for fishing for selective gear only. It's terrific cutthroat fishing. It's a secret. I've fished it there myself. But now it's been closed after the March 31st date. This is sort of standard statewide, and I've heard it was closed for standardization. There's no stocks of concern in the Deschutes River. Most of our local rivers, the Wainuchi, the Satsup, and later the Chehalis, are closed during this time that should be open. We need to go back to the previous years and the previous 20 years regulations to allow us to fish there during the months of April till the end of May now. I've handed in a paper for you that covers more issues. Thank you for what you do. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jim. No, oh, excuse me, Commissioner McIsaac.
Question. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Thanks very much for the testimony, Mr. Tuggle, and good to see you at the front
good
table
to see
here.
You.
I have a question about later today. You said you would be testifying tomorrow. Before I say that, though, you mentioned a secret cutthroat fishery, and we've got a couple of television cameras up here, so I'm not sure how long that secret is going to last.
My tires are probably flat in the parking lot.
Later in the afternoon, we're going to be looking at the next biennial budget, and there may be some discussion about increasing the number of fall Chinook salmon in the Deschutes. Your organization have any perspective, pro and con, about that? I don't believe that's a public testimony matter this afternoon.
We're absolutely in favor of increasing the number of Chinook in the Deschutes, and we really want to see the hatchery built for lots of reasons, including education. But all you have to do is look at the map of the contribution that Deschutes River Chinook make to our state and our fisheries. It's phenomenal. Nia Bay to end of the Sound. There are no other hatcheries quite like that. The Nisqually Hatchery produces quite a bit of that, and so does the Puyallup. But we have an opportunity here that where wild stocks are not a factor. This is a total artificial run. We can pump the system as full as science permits under good management of marked Chinook. Benefits the tribal fishery, benefits the sport fishery, and it just goes on and on from there.
Thank you.
We good?
Don?
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm still Donnie Dipper. I don't have any of you seen any of the emails you've gotten in the last week to the commission? I guess not. Okay, so we'll start with that. I've stepped up my campaign because I believe you folks are the ones that are going to make the decision to stop the banning of the American Dipper in this state. It's going to happen. You guys are going to get with the program, I'm sure, because you're aligning yourself with the wrong people. The relationship with this, I don't know who was with the commission in 2010, 2011, but the relationship between the Smithsonian and what they did with you folks, I'm going to be digging into it. If I have to use Freedom of Information Act to get information, I will, and that's going to make me really angry because I've done it before, and it's really an annoying process to go through. But right now, you guys, as far as I'm concerned, you're aligned with what went on with the Smithsonian and what goes on with banning the Dipper in this state. And you probably haven't been following my Facebook page either. I suggest you do that. I suggest you read the emails you're getting from the people that excuse me, that follow me, because they're probably just as passionate as I am. But the rhetoric is going up and up and up because I'm putting it on you guys to get this done. I've reached out to environmental groups. They're not really interested. They don't want to spend the money. But you guys can make the decision. It's going to be an easy decision. You can align yourself with people like the Smithsonian and these bird banders. And in my opinion, these people are molesters and terrorists because that's exactly what they've done to the American Dipper. You align yourself with these people, you're one of these people. That's the way the rhetoric's going to head, as far as I'm concerned. I'd like to get this taken care of. You guys can do it. The more I've looked into the Smithsonian thing, it was just an evil deed. I mean, I can't believe that it got past this commission in the first place, or if it even did. Somebody glad-handed this. It was a horrible, horrible thing. Somebody got something out of this, and I'm going to keep digging it, and I'm going to dig into every one of you, and I'm going to put all of this on you until you get onto my side and agree with me that banning the American Dipper is wrong, and it should be prohibited. So,
thank
that's
you.
Pretty much where I'm at. Okay,
Commissioner Thorburn.
Joe, perhaps you recall, we were going to look into whether or not we issued the collection permit for that research. Do you know if that ever got resolved? Or whether, since it's a federal agency, it came directly through?
Commissioner, Vice Chair Carpenter, Commissioner Thorburn, I don't know. Let me check with the staff.
Thank
and
you.
If we can get back.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, next to David Lynn and Paul Rudnick.
Good morning. I'm David Lynn, here from Ocean Shores, and representing myself. Recently, in my local newspaper, a pest control operator advocated for the killing of moles through some rather horrific means. In doing so, he referred to the current ban on body-gripping traps as political stupidity and the use of concussion devices as human ingenuity. He referred to moles as nuisance wildlife, which is an oxymoron. These comments really troubled me, and I have numerous molehills in my yard, and I'm glad that they can be there. So this led me on to talk about a couple other related topics. There have been ongoing efforts to study the translocation of wolves to the Olympic National Park. While this would be a positive step in reintroducing wolves to their natural habitat, the driving force behind the current study is coming from ranchers in eastern Washington who want to move wolves out of their territory. While I've heard tales of huge losses of livestock, the facts indicate otherwise. According to the charts in the 2017 annual wolf report, a total of 35 head of cattle and 30 sheep have been killed or injured by wolves over the past 6 years. Over that same time period, a minimum of 65 wolves have been killed by all causes, mostly human. This is on the basis of over 1 million head of livestock and approximately 100 wolves. Last year, King 5 News ran an investigative report on black bear killing in the state. It was revealed that the department was not enforcing the rules set up by voters in Initiative 655. In King 5's report, they interviewed department staffers who admitted that they were authorizing the killing of bears in anticipation of damage rather than a result of a problem. I called and wrote my state representatives and sent them a link to King 5's report and heard nothing. Finally, an environmental organization has filed suit against the department this year for failing to uphold the law. The lawsuit states, in passing initiatives to ban these heartless hunting practices, voters clearly indicated that inhumane bear hunting methods aren't acceptable in Washington, that the Fish and Wildlife Department's bear killing program is cruel, ineffective, and ecologically harmful. We need to stop it. The common factor in each of these, from moles to bears, is that each of these situations is that humans create a problem and then argue the only solution is to kill the innocent, sentient being whose only crime is doing what nature designed it to do. Moles are a problem only because humans want a chemically altered monoculture over a natural habitat. Sea lions are only a problem because humans thought that it would be a good idea to stop the natural flow of rivers and streams and interrupt natural cycles. Wolves are a problem only because humans have brought invasive species of farm animals into wilderness areas, have driven out the native ungulates that are the prey animals for these predators. Bears are only a problem because humans have created an artificial environment that deprives these animals of their natural food sources. I hope the commission will work with the new director to ensure that the department follows the law and works for the benefits of all the citizens of the state and reduces the depredation of wildlife by humans. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, department members and commissioners. My name is Paul Rudnick, and it is a privilege to appear in this public forum in beautiful Washington State. Our company, GrowerFrog.com, supplies see-through Xenopus and Sagarana tadpoles for anatomy and metamorphosis study. Xenopus and Sagarana are the gold standard in elementary education. See-through tadpoles allow a study of living heartbeats. A kid can watch a live heartbeat without the need to dissect a live native frog. We're the only company in the world to provide BD-negative, rhinovirus-negative, and salmonella-negative non-invasive tadpoles. Our petition to reclassify the non-invasive volcano frog in the meeting on July 20th has been denied. At the conference call, I was surprised that our petition was glanced over and the second frog, which we applied for, was given no discussion. And, oh, by the way, there's a second petition. Yeah, okay, denied. The volcano frog is not Xenopus laevis. It's this little endangered frog, not this frog. The only relationship between the two, even though they share the same genus, is that, evolutionarily speaking, 50 million years ago, give or take, they had a common ancestor. They're not the same. By taking action to deny access to core biological science curriculum, which this is, we provide tadpoles for elementary and middle school and high school education. Every child in the state of Washington, from kindergarten, elementary school, middle school, and high school, is being denied access to education. The legal justification for criminalizing elementary education curriculum is that invasive species regulations and laws need to be enforced, which I understand. The problem is that this is not an invasive species, it's an endangered species. I really hope that this is all a misunderstanding. I just can't believe that this little non-invasive frog could be possibly considered as an invasive species. I understand the department's concern. I understand that there was an invasive species population in Lacey of this frog, not this frog, and that it cost money to eradicate it, and I'm with you 100 million percent. You won't have to incur any cost in eradicating the little non-invasive volcano frog because it cannot possibly survive in any natural habitat, in any disturbed habitat, in a swimming pool. We will submit application for appeal in a few days. Thank you for listening, and thank you sincerely for allowing me to appear with this public forum.
Thank you. Commissioner Thorburn?
Thank you, Mr. Rednick, and we certainly appreciate your dedication to education of our youth. Certainly science education is very, very important. I'm sorry that you thought that we gave it a small attention. The issue is Xenopus is non-native species in our waters. And our approach in Washington is what we call the precautionary principle. We do not intentionally support the introduction of non-native species into our waters. We understand that you are very careful in how you produce these animals, and you provide them to the educational facilities in a very good condition. However, once it arrives in the educational facilities, it's no longer in your hands, and we have no way of being certain that it's not going to enter our waters. That violates the precautionary principle, which is how we made our decision, how we make our decisions. And so I just was hoping that we could explain that to you.
Commissioner Thorburn, I appreciate your explanation. And in most instances, I would understand it. But essentially what you're doing is criminalizing elementary education. This is a core curriculum for every child in the state of Washington. And very Xenopus is this huge. In fact, I've gone through every tadpole that there is. When you narrow it down to this one endangered frog, the precautionary doctrine is what we're practicing. I'm limiting it to one very specific frog. The frog is native to Managua, the Cameroons. It's not like you can import them. It's an endangered species. It's IUCN near threatened. And I'm trying to get one little tadpole so that children in the entire state, if you don't permit this, you're going to be shutting off the entire education system for the entire state for possibly a generation. It does not make any sense to me.
Just one other point that I'd like to mention in terms of our consideration. Certainly, if you had a specific school or school system that was willing to work with you and obtain a collection permit, then we could make it available. That's how we do things.
I understand that's how you do it, but it's just not practical. It's just not practical. I mean, we provide. I know a lot about what we do. In our facility, we send a BD negative, rhinovirus negative, salmonella negative, see-through tadpole directly to the students. There is no other tadpole other than this particular Xenopus species, or one which is even more critically endangered, which I'm not applying for permit for, which will allow this to happen. And if it is released, it's food. It's gone. Frog's this big. It's not going to invade anything anywhere in Washington State. I understand the precautionary situation. We've been there since several other states before, and indeed the regulation said all species of the genus Xenopus were not permitted, but they opted in. They allowed us to bring in the volcano frog because recognize that education is what I consider to be very important, and there really is no alternative. You're basically shutting down education in the whole state for as long as it takes to get it approved, in my opinion. I'm just letting you know. That's all. Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
If you want to appeal, you can, and we'll review it. Thank you very much. Lawrence Buckland and Molly Linville.
Am I up?
You are,
okay,
indeed.
Before my 3 minutes starts, please. I have to say that your website and the folks that support that website, I suspect, are in the back corner. They do a wonderful job. That's a great tool, and I make use of it on a regular basis. So I'll applaud that usage. Okay. I'm here today, Lawrence Buckland, with Puget Sound Anglers. I'm actually the Southern Vice President. Excuse me. So the first issue that I have today is an old one,
Over 3 years ago, Norm Reinhart and I were here before you speaking about the Point No Point ramp and the lack of progress on that ramp. I'm here to tell you that despite the letters of the prior director to the Corps of Engineers and to the tribes, resulted in no progress. The whole effort seemed to have gone somewhat moribund until late 2017, at which point an ad hoc group was formed to include Bremerton Sportsman Club, Kitsap Pogie Club, CCA, Puget Sound Anglers, and several independent folks. And we've been working with staff. I think we've had four meetings, and despite the best efforts of those folks trying to re-engage with the tribes, there's been no progress. So I'm here to ask that you folks engage with staff, possibly have another public update on the status, and hopefully work with staff to try and find a path to success on getting this ramp built. We've got $4 million sunk in this thing, and we got a great park, but we don't have the ramp that was intended. So, moving on, unless there's any questions on that issue. Advisory Group and Management Board, you have a website, or Fish and Wildlife has a website, and it touts the need for advisory boards, you know, communication, all of that. I'm going to say that website or that web page with hot links to the boards and advisory groups is not being adequately maintained. There are groups, advisory boards and groups that are not represented on there, and the public can't get to those meetings if it's not made available the information as to those activities. Delegation of authority. How quickly 3 minutes goes when you're on a roll. I would ask that any loss of public access, as in the Nisqually River closures on Sundays for the next, I think it's 6 weeks, come before you so that you're aware of them. And Puyallup Hatchery, sure like to see those 800,000 spring Chinook clipped so that they can be made available for recreational activities through the North of Falcon process. Okay, thank you for the extra time. I'm done. Any questions?
Mr. Kehoe.
Hi, thank you for coming today. This boat ramp is, this is a recurrent issue. I remember, you know, I think it was after the Port Townsend meeting a couple years ago, I think we were starting to make progress, kind of narrowing down kind of the issues. I would suggest that this might be, and I'm sure I don't want to add to the new director's workload, but as you go out and meet with the different tribes, you know, the Port Gamble, the Point No Point Treaty folks, you know, I think they're, they would like the boat ramp. I think they would use it. They have some issues that may or may not be directly related to the boat ramp itself. It's complicated, and but I think it's probably worth a fresh start for the director to maybe engage and clearly get involved in that. And see, you know, it's always helpful to have a fresh set of eyes. And I think, you know, we should not give this issue up. Continue to look for possible solutions. I would just encourage our new director to kind of add that to your list and get familiar with it. It's a big deal, and these kind folks have been very patient and come before us, and probably would rather be fishing than coming here.
Organizing the fishing derby on Saturday morning. If anybody wants to skip out, I'm selling tickets out of Point Defiance. And thank you for that extra comment. If I may, we've lost two deep water ramps in Pierce County since this 3-year period. And you can't, Point Defiance is the only one in Pierce County, and you have to come all the way down to Thurston County to get one. So we're losing access. We need to be sure we're pushing for more access. Again, thank you.
Excuse me, hold on 1 minute. Commissioner Thorburn.
Well, since I think this is Director 3 now who's dealt with this, I was wondering if a little bit different approach. Perhaps we, the commission, as your director, this is the one working with them, invite representatives from the Point No Point Tribe Commission to tribal representatives to come talk to us about this. We kind of hear it through staff, but I'm wondering if a different approach and just kind of listening to what their issues are would be helpful.
I think that's a good approach, and I might take it upon myself to talk to the executive director of the Point No Point Treaty Council, and because I have spoken with him about it in the past, and I just think that this is something that could get done and should get done. Obviously,
needs to get done.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Molly Linville, and I'm a member of the state's Wolf Advisory Group. But more importantly, I think I'm a fifth-generation Lincoln County wheat farmer's daughter, and I am currently running my husband's fourth-generation cattle ranch out in Palisades, which, if you don't know where that is, that's near Wenatchee. And I'm here today because wolves have been absent from the landscape in Washington State for 90 years, and so producers don't have the muscle memory on how to deal with these apex predators on the landscape. And, being a farmer's daughter, I know that we're a little kind of a prickly lot sometimes, and sometimes we're a little stoic and don't really say what we're feeling. But I've been so proud of my community for adapting to wolves being on the landscape, and they're trying. And it's huge that they're trying. And so as a Wolf Advisory Group member, I know that we have, through a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, produced a protocol, a written protocol for managing wolves on the landscape. And, of course, I'm talking mostly in the northeast portion of the state. And really what I want to encourage the commission to think about is that we just need to follow that protocol. It's robust. It was intended to be adaptive management, and we need to play it out and let it play out so that we can understand whether or not it's working and then make appropriate changes after we've utilized the protocol. Because what's happening right now is producers have a moving target, and the rules keep feeling like they're changing, whether they are or they're not. And you're not going to get a lot of producers at the table. So what I'm here to tell you is that they're at a boiling point in the Northeast. And I really want to help you understand that. And I want you to know that rural folks, we're really committed to our county commissioners and our county sheriff. They feel like family to us. And what I really want to help you all avoid is that we just have the sheriff saying, okay, that's it. This is a public safety issue. We're taking over, right? We would really like to learn how to manage on a landscape with wolves on it without anarchy, because that is the general way that, and that's not a threat, that's sort of how we're hardwired, that's sort of the direction we're going. So if I could just encourage you to, and I understand that there's lawsuits that are impeding using the protocol to some degree, but it is meant to be adaptive management. So if we can just really work hard at keeping the department so that we're utilizing the protocol and determining whether or not it works so that we can make some changes as WEG. Thank you.
Commissioner Thorburn.
Thanks a lot, Molly. I always appreciate listening to you at the WAG and speaking for your community. One of the senses that you give me, as well as many of your producer colleagues, is your dedication to your occupation and reminding us that you want to learn how to do this. You recognize that this is the new world or a world that has returned to you. And I think the strongest statement that I want to make is you want to keep your cattle. and so you want to learn how to do that with this new predator on the landscape. And I just want to express my trust in your community that is what you're trying to achieve. And because sometimes I feel that, you know, that isn't expressed, that it isn't there, maybe.
Yes.
But I want you to know that I really appreciate the work that you do, and I trust that that's what you, the producers, are trying to do. And thank you.
Thank you. I really appreciate that, because if you've been on the landscape for over 100 years, it's, you use the word occupation, but it's our culture.
Yes.
And I mean, it's like, it's all I've known. It's all my parents have known. It's our blood. It's our culture. And so I think that when people say, oh, well, you could just go get another job, like, you know, my great-grandpa built our house, like, and there's not a McDonald's in 30 miles for me to go work at. So, yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Commissioner Keeney also wrote
that,
a.k.a. Commissioner Henry
Clay. Or roadkill.
Well, I just want to thank Molly for coming today and give you any opportunity that you want, if you want to say more. But I want to thank you for all you do. I first met Molly, I think the first time was in a van headed to Montana to go to the Tom Minor Basin.
Yeah, that's
where
right.
We were all going to learn more about how to live with wolves and grizzlies and cattle all mixed together, and they seemed to come up with some ways to do that. But the neat thing about that was Molly just didn't go. She came back and started applying all those things to her place, which is more about cougars than wolves. Mm-hmm. But if you were to go read a book on what a rancher should or could do to avoid problems with predators, she does it. I mean, from guard dogs to holistic management to low-stress livestock, you know, having her herd trained to move as she wants them to rotating those animals on her range, you know, it's just done right. And so it's really neat to have someone like that out there, and when she speaks up for, you know, the folks in Northeast Washington, you should believe her. You know, they are in need of us to keep a watch on this, to stick to the protocols. And anyway, I just respect you so much, Molly. And then her place burns up a few years ago, you know, and she's fighting that battle now, trying to find ways to, you know, do a better job on allowing landowners on initial attack. So, just a wonderful person to know, and I want to thank you so much for all you do.
Thanks, Jay.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Let me also echo appreciation for you driving all the way over here, and you've done a very nice job speaking without notes before the dinger went off, and we really do value the commentary from our rural folks that we don't always see all the time, so thank you.
I do want you to know that it is a... It's a little easier for me, but you don't see producers in the room all the time, and it's not because they don't care. It's not because they're not engaged. It's not because they're not interested. They aren't here because it's really bloody hard. I mean, ranching is like playing a game of whack-a-mole. Just when you get one big, huge problem solved, another one pops up, and you're just constantly doing that, right? So please do not see their absence in the room as lack of interest. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Mr. Dave Duncan and Jeff Dawson.
Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
Commissioners. My name is Dave Duncan. I live at 4636 Weaver Road in Ellensburg, Washington. I'm a rancher, a hunter, and a conservationist. I'm also WCA chair of the Wildlife Rancher Sportsman ESA Committee, which is almost a full-time job. I also, a WAG member, I represent Washingtonians for Wildlife Conservation, which is a group made up of about 50 sportsmen and hunter organizations. I'm really going to go at risk with this commission today and talk about something that's awfully important to me, and that's trust. And I think it's the single most important factor for the future success of wolf management. I'm going to break one of my rules and speak to my past as an example of the importance and power of trust. I was raised on a cattle ranch and was out of that business for 30 plus years, returned to it 35 years ago. In the livestock business, your word is your bond. It's backed up by your actions, and those actions build trust. We sell, purchase, ship, get possession of hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of livestock on a handshake with no contract, no or check, just a person's reputation, and the check is always in the mail. That's real trust. It's a real pain, as you know, to sell a piece of land today. You know, I sell a piece of land of similar value to the livestock that went out on the same day, and it takes 50 or 100 pages of gobbledygook, numerous signatures, 30-plus days. There is no trust. In the years in between the cattle business, I operated and founded a business, operated for 30 years on federal land, 450 miles from the end of the road in Alaska, where logistics were not easy. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service trusted me to serve the public by issuing 10-year permits based on simple perspectives and prior actions. And they still issue the same long-term permits for my sons. Hundreds of guests came yearly, and they paid up front for their adventure. And they trusted us to be the designated spot on a given day with appropriate equipment, trained personnel, positive attitudes, lots of good food. For more than a half a century, we have filled our camps with multiple generations of folks based on repeat and referral with zero marketing or advertising. Trust is very powerful when earned through responsibility. I could be old-fashioned from a long-forgotten generation, but words matter when followed up by actions. That builds trust. Not following up on your words or mandates or responsibilities quickly builds distrust, which is hard to overcome and generally ends up in lawsuits. Maybe that's the world we live in today. For a decade, I've been an overall supporter of most of you know the department and the management contained in the Wolf Plan.
Mr. Duncan, could you kind of wrap it up?
Am I over 3 minutes?
You did. We'll give you another half. How's that down?
Okay. Anyway, I don't know how to summarize here.
He can use part of mine.
How are you going to end this, Dave?
I'm very disappointed in a lot of actions that have happened by the department in the last 6 months. It's built a lot of distrust with me. I feel that I can no longer stand on the hill and say, WAG and the department, we're going to get there. I haven't given up any faith at all. One of the real things that is, really concerns me was this data sharing issue where the department is not trusting my friends in the livestock business to have the proper data that they need to bust their ass to try to get to live with wolves. Excuse my French, it wasn't in here. And I've lost a lot of trust. I haven't given up, but I'm extremely disappointed. Sorry I took that long.
hang in there, and thank you for coming.
Thank you, Larry.
Jeff?
Do I need to use this, or are we all right without it?
Well, no, you're doing good.
I'm Jeff Dawson. I am a rancher. There's three generations on a ranch, and we're from Stevens County, just north of Colville. First of all, I'd like to thank our director and deputy director and those of you in the commission here for giving me the opportunity to speak today. I 3 minutes is short, but we'll do the best we can here. I want to talk about this data sharing thing. My family, our ranch, we've known we've had wolves for 16 years now. I was on the original wolf working group to formulate a plan for the state, and we have been working directly with the department, engaged with them since I think about 2011. Not only them, but Conservation Northwest come on board and provided some help and funding. Yep. To go along with this proactive stance or measures that we put in place to deal with the wolves as they interacted with our ranch and our livestock. Keep in mind that our ranch is about one third of its public land that we public grazing that we use. The other two thirds is private deeded land. Where we are today, we're dealing with three named wolf packs that interact on our ranch, and two that haven't been documented yet. That's five wolf packs that we know of. We've learned a considerable lot in them 16 years of what we're dealing with, and so this comes back to the data sharing. We felt that, and we've tried every proactive measure out there, so keep that in mind, and we've shook the hinges off the toolbox, but the data sharing part of it was an important tool, probably the most important tool of dealing with wolves as a livestock producer. Knowing where, you're not going to know where all the wolves are, but it gives you a general idea and to put you in that position where you're hiring range riders to do the work out there to avoid the conflict. It's going to inevitably, it will happen. We've had it happen to us, but to try and minimize that conflict that comes from it is where the data comes in. We're not out there to track the wolves, but we are out there to try and manage where the cattle are pertaining to where the wolf locations are. It has nothing to do with finding their... You want me to keep going, or...
You can go finish it up.
Thank you, because like I said, it could go on for a long time here. It has nothing to do with us finding a den site or the rendezvous sites. We know where them are. It is bothersome that there's other groups out there that seem to know the same information we do. But we've been on an upward curve as far as working with the department and this information until this year. It seems like we're on a downward spiral, and this is where the trust thing comes in. We started out, we get a blackout period during the denning time. That's okay, even though we'd like to have that information 12 months of the year, because them cattle are dealing with wolves 12 months of the year. It isn't a grazing season that gets cut off the 15th of October. But that's okay. We were acceptant of the blackout period, knowing that the 1st of June, when the cattle went onto the public grazing allotments, we would start getting that information. That got rolled back to where we were getting it the 15th of June, getting a little later, when that information would become available for the employees that were working for us. To now, this year, we're at the 15th of July before that data came out to us. And that there had been some changes put in place. We're going to give it 30 days to see how we liked it. Everything we can see now is the original information is what's working the best for us. What was added to it, maybe in the department's mind, was to make it better, but it's not making it better. It's deteriorating it, and it's, I believe there's technology out there. We should still be on that upward plane. Let's try to make it better, if that makes sense. Don't take away from it, or this program will fail completely.
Thank you so much for your...
And I apologize for taking so much time.
Well, I just want to say that all the testimony from the public is valuable to us. It's not, you know, we got... This is a part-time job that's turned into a full-time job on this side of the desk, too, for most of us, and we want to be part of the solution. But we do have our annual WOLF update scheduled here in just a little bit, and I hope you'll stick around for that as well. So
I intend to.
Mr. Hosemiller, and then
both had a pleasant opportunity to talk to both these guys on the phone. I get a kick out of it. They fall into the cowboy adage of public speaking is about like riding bulls. You're never ready. It just comes your turn. But I set out to load logs one morning about 4 o'clock. My cell phone doesn't work at the house, so I got up where my cell phone worked, clicked it on, and got a message from Mr. Dawson. And I thought, huh, I get done, my truck shipped, I need to get back. I got lucky and got to talk with him. Everything you always hear about the Dawsons is they are the gold standard as far as preventative. And when this man called me up and was really wadded up over this, and rightfully so, I've taken it very, very, very seriously. He's never complained. He's always had a positive message, what they're wanting to do with those, and we need to listen to these people. Because when we start losing people like this, we are in, just like Jeff said, we're in a downward spiral. We've got to pick this up. Because we've got to learn, and these poor buggers in Northeast are really facing a challenge. And we're gaining fastly in Southeast. I've seen more wolf activity in our county in the last 6 months than I've seen in the previous 6 years. So it isn't just them, so we've got to come up with some kind of solution in this eastern side of the state, because these people can only take so much, and that's what it comes down to. So we've got to listen to them, we've got to figure something out and give these people some relief. So
thank you, Commissioner Keeney.
Thank you, and I'd just like to thank both Dave and Jeff for coming, and I've had the pleasure to work with the Dawson family since about 2011 when they were the first pilot program, kind of a cooperative effort that they stepped up to do, and didn't make them real popular, but they did it because it was for the good of their ranch and for their herd and for their family, and I just respect that so much that I think we've come a long way since then. There's a lot of people doing now what you were brave enough to do, you know, back in 2011. So thank you for that. I also want to point out the range rider that they hire. We've worked with her for many years now, and just the idea that to get your head around this idea of how the data changed. You know, that range rider plans her day and her night. She's camped out with the herd. She's camped out where the wolves are. But to know the direction they're headed, so that's point data every 6 hours, is really, really, really valuable for her to do her job and protect that herd. And while doing that, move that herd in a way that's beneficial to this ranch family to put weight on, which is what they're out there for, to put weight on during the grazing season. And it's a tool, just as Jeff said, but it's a very important tool. And to have it as clear as it can be in a way that they can access it. I remember when we were trying to, you know, make sure we had a satellite hookup up in the top of Smackout Meadow so that the range rider could access that morning every night and every, you know, when it was came available at 6 in the morning, she could look at it, 12 noon, 6 at night, et cetera, and wake up and get going, you know. And I think it's why we've had as few depredations there as we have had. It doesn't work all the time, but... I think that the trust issue is really big here. So, you know, I would support what Jeff's saying, and I know their activities up there. They're like Jay here said, is they're doing everything they need to do. If you don't believe it, and you spend some time out there, you don't get a lot of sleep because they're so busy trying to allow livestock and wolves to interact and be on the same landscape. So thank you and your family for that, Jeff.
Mr. Thorburn.
Hopefully be quick. Thank you, Dave and Jeff. I just wanted to acknowledge something else that you said, Jeff, and that was you have three known packs. You know there are five. I've also had a chance to interact with Hillary and hear about what they're doing with the collaboratives over in Montana. And one of the things that impressed me was she talked about how she knew her cattle and she knew her wolf packs as well. And you know, what you're saying is, wow, you know what's going on your land. You're out there, and I just wanted to sort of point that out to my fellow commissioners as well. We need to trust you. I mean, you're working hard to protect your herd, and you know what's going on out there. So I just wanted to point that out. Thank you.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Next would be Tom Davis and Paul Lubesmeyer. I hope I got that right. Did I not get that right?
Can I speak on behalf of agenda item number 6 at this time?
Are you Paul?
Yes.
You can speak about anything you'd like.
Well, he can. I'd like to speak after the presentation of agenda number 6.
Yes. 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 Yes.
Yes. Yes. So he's going to withdraw for now.
The next one would be then to come up would be Sarah Ryan.
I'll grab it.
Tom?
Good morning, everyone. Tom Davis, Washington Farm Bureau. I'd like to welcome the new director. And to Commissioner Keeney, we're gonna miss you. You've done a great job for the public and for the ranchers of the state and for the wolves and the rest of the wildlife, so appreciate your service. A number of issues I'll just try to touch on quickly, including the WAG, the post-delisting management plan for wolves, pinniped numbers, the wolf color data sharing, as you've heard about, and then Skagit elk. On the WAG, is our last meeting, we had a conversation about next steps as we prepare for development of a post-delisting management plan. As you can see, the lovely display on the wall here that staff prepared for you. The only thing I would share with that is the timeline and sequencing. It's our feeling that the vision statement, as that moves forward, should be developed by WAG, not based on public input out, you know, as they go through the public meetings. We think it'd be more beneficial for the public to actually see what the WAG is envisioning for a vision statement based on all the work that we have done as a group. So I just wanted to share that with you. Pinniped numbers. I have the opportunity to serve on the governor's Southern Resident Killer Whale Task Force. Your staff did very well, by the way, at the meeting this week. From our vantage point, obviously the pinniped numbers in the state need to be managed down so that our Chinook populations can thrive and therefore our orca pods can thrive as well. So we're very supportive of management of the pinniped numbers, reducing those numbers. On the wolf, the collar data sharing, as you've already heard, we are concerned with some of the decisions that have been made this year by staff to restrict the access to that collar data and the impacts that is having on the ranchers. We think it's arbitrary that a 30-day number was provided, that we'll continue to share the pinpoint data for 30 days. We don't think that's a decision that should be made by the Wolf internal group. That should be made by senior management and preferably out of the director's office because of the implications of that decision. And as you've heard, too, it creates a trust issue from the ranchers, from the county commissioners, from sheriffs. And so, again, we believe that's a decision that should come out of the director's office, not the Wolf internal group. Skagit Elk, I appreciate the fact that you got to hear from Randy Good and Bill Schmidt, who is our the Farm Bureau's county president out of Skagit County. They're on the ground. They see what's happening there. I appreciate the fact that the commission is paying more attention to that issue, and the chair came to a meeting that Amy Windrup and staff put together with tribal leaders in the last couple months. I don't remember now when that meeting was. First meeting that I recall that's ever happened. More needs to be done, but I think staff is moving at the right direction, so we appreciate their efforts as well, but really appreciate your continued leadership on that issue, too. Thank you.
I just want to speak a minute before I forget to later in this agenda item about the importance of finding some resolution to the Skagit Elk thing. I don't know when we had it scheduled on here. I've got a lot of notes on it, but it's a bigger problem than Randy and Bill were able to get across to all of us. I hear from a lot of people. I live in Skagit County. I think the situation is out of hand. And Director, I don't know if you've had much time yet to learn anything about it, but hopefully we can work on that. I think it's a critical state right now. So, thank you. Sarah?
Good morning. I'm Sarah Ryan with the Washington Cattlemen's Association. And since I get to represent an association, I have several items to get to visit with you about. First, welcome Director Suswin to WDFW. I think our association is looking forward to working with you. Thank you, Jay, for all of the work that you've done on the behalf of the commission. So I get to start off with a praise and a thank you. Your staff has agreed to do grazing on the 4-0, and we came to the end of the grazing season and evaluated the landscape and determined that there was still a lot of rank forage out there that was a fire hazard, and they decided to go ahead and extend the grazing season. So we appreciate that forward thinking and the management that went into that, and actually recognizing that grazing is a management tool to help with fuel loads. So appreciate the work that Cynthia and her team are doing. We are preparing comments on WDFW's Riparian Management Guidelines Volume 2. Our primary concerns with that is what appears to be a significant land grab titled the Riparian Management Zone, which is probably the biggest buffer we've ever seen proposed, and is quite concerning. And additionally in that, the implication that local programs such as VSP, GMA, and SMA are not adequate to protect local lands is quite concerning. So we look forward to submitting those comments. The next two things I have to talk about, you've already heard from our members on regarding elk and wolves. And I would say generally, the perception I'm getting from my members is that tolerance and trust for what the department's doing is dropping. So whether it's elk issues across the state, I had members from Kittitas County, where there's a really good pilot project going on, express great frustration with the elk situation there. You heard about the situation with the Skagit elk, foot rot issues that aren't being addressed. I feel like Amy's doing a great job in getting parties to the table, but in the meantime, there continues to be problems that, at least from a producer standpoint, we feel like aren't getting there. Do really appreciate that you're adding Skagit elk as a primary focus. That's a really good thing to hear. I was impressed to hear that. And then on wolves, the lack of information sharing, we've gone over that. I would encourage you to consider extending that for the duration of the grazing season, which, as Jeff mentioned, is 12 months of the year. But I would encourage you to extend it beyond 30 days. He mentioned that 4 or 5 of the days during this 30-day window, the data wasn't available. So as you have people both on the elk and wolf side that are trying really hard to be exemplary and work with the department, recognize that and kind of give back to them for that. And that's, I guess, the extent that I have. I look forward to seeing your continued progress and working forward.
Thank you. The last two, Sean Cantrell and Aaron Scotten. Oh. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Vice Chair, all commissioners, Director. My name's Sean Cantrell. I am with Defenders of Wildlife. I haven't been here for several months because I'm going through a professional transition where more and more of my work is at the federal level. So the good news for you is that you hear less from me. I am remaining involved, and that's why I'm here today, but it is in a different capacity. Defenders is going to continue to be very involved, if not increased. My colleagues, some of whom you've already met, others you may not yet, Quinn Reed, Rob Crable, I think Quinn's in the room here somewhere, so they will continue to carry on many of the things that I've been talking to you about. But I wanted to take a couple minutes today just to talk. For those of you who don't recall, I'm on the WAG, at least for a short amount more time, probably transitioning off here within the next month or so. But I really wanted to echo what you heard from my colleagues on the WAG, Dave Duncan and Molly and Tom Davis, as well as what you heard from Mr. Dawson about what's going on, and that trust. While I appreciate what Dave said that is going down, I'd like to differ. Sorry, Dave. And I don't know that it's going down. I think we've certainly hit a bump, but I would hope that this is not something that, like, wow, we're really in a tailspin and we need to make a big change. I feel like we're at a place where we're testing the strengths of those relationships between conservation groups and hunters or cattlemen, between the department and those interest groups. But I have such huge respect and appreciation for what my colleagues on the WAG and the producing community and the hunting community and what they're trying to do with wolf advocates such as my organization and others, that we not throw the baby out with the bathwater, that we think, okay, we need to make some big changes here, that we really need to shift course, because I think while we have hit a bump with some of the communications and how we're using the data, I feel like, you know, there's an important need to make sure that we continue to build the trust and sustain that and recognize that we are working together. There's been a huge progress. I mean, the fact that, you know, Dave and Maui and I and Tom can, you know, I sat down and Tom didn't realize I was sitting behind him, and he turned around after. He goes, "Oh crap, I didn't know you were here." And you know, but it's that kind of good-natured joking and teasing that I think is indicative of what the WAG process has engendered and what we can continue to build on. So while there are issues that need to be addressed and we need a lot more work to be done, I hope that you guys don't hit a panic button and say we need a dramatic change. I know my time's up. I'll just say the last thought is that the WAG is going through a transition, you know, that the facilitation that has been provided is done. And so it's a time where the value and the process of the WAG could get tested. And so I hope that the commission stays all in on supporting what the WAG is doing as it goes forward. So with that, thank you. And I guess just lastly, welcome, new director. And Jay, thank you so much as well.
Mr. Baker.
Sean, I'll be quick here. We've heard a lot about trust today and a lot about the changes in the data sharing. Pretty much we've heard one approach to that, and it's very convincing. I'm wondering if your organization or you feel differently about that.
First and foremost, I don't have to rely on that data for my livelihood or way of life in the same way that the producers do. So that's a huge caveat that I would say. And so I would really want to hear and encourage the producers to continue to share their concerns with the department staff all the way up to the director. Having said that, I do see real value in some of the changes that the department attempted to do. I don't think they'll take too much offense when I say I think they kind of bungled the rollout of it and the communication around it. But the idea of trying to demonstrate through what's been affectionately referred to as the blob, instead of giving pinpoints, you're giving these concentrations, is really valuable to see where the trends are. You know, if you're an expert data analyst and you know how to read all these things, maybe the pinpoint data will be more valuable, and particularly ranchers who've been using that pinpoint data for years probably have learned how to interpret it. But for a newer producer who's just getting it the first time, you know, all that data is just a bunch of data points as opposed to something that's more clear. I think the other piece that really will be necessary, and I think the department says they're attempting to do this, I can't, you know, attest to how well it's happened, is explaining, whether it be the pinpoint data or the blob or anything else, letting each producer who has a data sharing agreement understand what that information means and what it doesn't mean. That, yeah, that's where the wolf was, you know, 18 hours ago. You know, that could be 30 miles away. Or, you know, but these five data points all within the last 18 hours, you should probably make sure your livestock are safe if they're in that area, or, you know, move them around or whatnot. So I'm not sure how responsive that is to you, but that's my thoughts.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. You indicated you feel there are some benefits from the blue blob approach. If you're going to cite one as the highest benefit that you see from the blue blob approach, what would that be?
At a very quick, easy look at it, you see that's a concentration. There's a lot of wolf activity in that area, and that, you know, over time and in space, so that you'll see in a way that a series of data points that aren't aggregated, or again, I'm not a data person to be able to tell you, use the right term, but that sense of that this is a concentration of heavy, intense activity by whatever collared wolf or wolves are there, so that is, you know, a much stronger indication of where there is likely to continue to be activity, whether it be a rendezvous site or a den site. So I think that, to me, would be the single biggest value.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
Aaron, you're up, sir.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to come in here. I built quite a packet. I don't know if you guys have gotten it yet. So I'll apologize for the pictures being in black and white. I did it here at the hotel. I'd like you to note, when you look at those pictures, when you look up through those trees 50 yards up that hill is a huge grassy knob, and that's where those cows originally were at before they were chased out of there. I got to echo a lot of what I've heard here on the trust issue. I kind of disagree with Sean and go with Dave, at least in Northeast. That is a kind of a downward spiral up there. There's zero representation to any agency or any group that comes from Northeast Washington. We've tried. We've been told we're too unique. The communities up there feel like they have been left behind, and that we are absolutely not trusted when it comes to the data issue, that our view is too skewed because we have the majority of the wolves. Well, then why aren't we the ones getting the conversations going? If you want to learn how to do it or experiment with it or play with science, come up where the wolves are at. We got them. We also have the largest density of wolves and cattle all in one place. I don't do well with the public speaking. I'd really rather be on a horse right now.
You're doing very well.
So I'm just really frustrated, I guess. But a lot of what they're saying, I'd have to say, comes the same, if not twofold, from Northeast Washington. And it's not just the ranching community. It's our entire community, the shop owners, the store owners. Everyone up there feels like we have been left behind, that we are just too different, so we're not going to be addressed. Moving on with the notes, try to stick with some of this because a lot of that's in the paperwork I sent you. I'd like to see a focus shift so that we can get a removal of problem wolves. You guys are probably going to face some information here very soon, if I was a betting man, on what to do. Those of us on the ground that are there every single day, every single night, can give you some insight. If we're going to do any kind of removal, it needs to be the right wolf. You know, that's what needs to happen. We don't want to see our cows dead more than we're concerned about the killing of wolves. So please take that into consideration. Yeah, I kind of hit that already. So again, there's no agriculturally dependent group from Northeast that has input. there's a big deal going on over here. Once again, I would say that Northeast has been missed on that one. The trial run up in the Northeast. We do want an efficient and effective system to continue to move forward. We want that upward movement like Jeff was talking to you guys about. Not every ranch, everyone knows that, not every ranch, but many of them there are now willing and able to put in, and they're trying. They want to move cattle closer together. They're willing to move them according to what we're seeing on those data points. But if this is going to fail, and like Molly said, it's not a threat, it's just who we are. If we're going to be left behind and this is going to look like a failure, then the doors will just shut. And then the biggest loser there is the wolves. So I'd like you to keep that in mind moving forward. And I'll just stop there for now.
Mr. Thorburn.
Thanks, Aaron. I just want to let my fellow commissioners know that Aaron has taken real leadership in terms of bringing more of the ranchers on board up in the Northeast. And I think it's the first time we've seen your face here, but I wanted my fellow commissioners to know that you have been very involved in that community building, and I appreciate your efforts.
Thank you. I appreciate seeing you when you came up.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
That ends our open public comment segment.